I look funny, all black up yesterday.
But she says she bumped into a wall when she's running after to churn them.
Yeah, but last Saturday, you see her arm was all black and blue, right?
What you saying? You think something wrong between her and Jack?
I ain't sure, but you know Jack is a jealous man. I hear him and Cora last Friday. I hear him say he hear Cora have eyes for Junior.
Now, you know that ain't true. Cora is a good woman, does mind her business, take care of them churn, and go to church every Sunday. So what you think we should do?
I think we should report Jack, you know. Cora don't say nothing, but silence hides violence, and we don't want to line up in the cemetery.
Not me. I ain't getting in nobody business. Then Jack come after me, and I line up next to Cora.
No, man, we could call or text Crime Stopper. And remember, we can even get some grocery money for our tip.
Remind me again how this work.
We can call them in Miami at 328-TIPS or 328-8477. Or when we in the island, call toll-free at 300-TIPS or 300-8477. And if you don't have no minutes, use the Crack Crime Bahamas app, and we could text them. And the messages get on mix-up before it leave your phone, so nobody can know what you're saying.
So what are we waiting on then? Let's go earn some grocery money.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Kids is a dynamite! Spooky that girl called you. Baby, she called you too. But she won't get me too. Why would she want you to do? She needs someone to break down she building. She needs someone to make it explode. She asked you for a horse, take the dynamite. To make it collapse and to implode.
What you okay, baby?
She says she want the big combustion. She want me to dig up all she floor. So I give her the full explosion. I end up blowing out she doors. Girl, you better hold on.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Monday, November 4th. It's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. And once again, this is C. A. Neri, and I shall be your host for today. I have two topics I want to discuss today. I've invited Erin Green to stay back so she can hash it out with me, right? One is about what is the middle class? Do we have a middle class? How have we defined what the middle class is in the Bahamas, or are we adopting American concept and systems and trying to force it onto a developing nation? But I'm going to talk about that at the tail end. But I have a pet peeve. I want a pet peeve where I need the Bahamian public to join me on. I have a movement I need the Bahamian people to echo. I need Bahamians to help me as proof that we are most civilized. I came across a quote, Charles Dickens, right? Just to describe what we are going through, because I am frustrated. But people say, man, Neri, you always complain. You're always frustrated. But I have hope. I hope that this Bahamas can be greater, bigger, grander, because we have sensible people living here. We are not by chance next to the United States, to say, oh, just happenstance. We are next to the United States and on top of the Caribbean by destiny, by God's grace. So we have a responsibility, the gateway to the new world, to do better, not to be average. We could look at other people's mistake and say, no, we ain't doing that. We're supposed to be the greatest little country in the world. And it seems as if we are frustrating that idea. Dickens says in one of his books, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom, it was the age of foolishness. It was the epoch of belief, it was the epoch of incredulity, right? It was the season of light, it was the season of darkness. It was a spring of hope, it was a winter of despair. Right, the tale of two cities. I always liked that quote, and I said, let me read that in, because that's the concept of what I'm talking about. That so many things, so many parallel themes are happening in the Bahamas that we just seem to be a hodgepodge of mixing up, and we don't understand where we're going. Recently, and I'm starting the show now, recently, the Bahamas got a phone call, my words, from a university. I think it's Wisconsin, but I forgive me for it. Got a phone call from a university who is asking if they can send the remains of three Awak, three Lucayan Indians that was taken from the Bahamas in the 1920s. Let me repeat that. In circa 1920, in a cave on San Salvador, Watlands Island, San Salvador, explorers, somebody, came across three skeletal remains of Lucayan Indians. They tested it and said, wow, this is a big fang, right? They've used these tests to prove that their descendants of Lucayan Indians still exist in the world. They prove that there are Lucayan Indians in Puerto Rico and Tino Indians in Cuba and, of course, even Haiti and Jamaica through fangs, remains found in the Bahamas. These three remains happen to be sent to the United States, sent to this particular university, and in the 1920s, and they forgot about it. They said, man, we need to do any more research. All the research for this, it's done. It's done. So they kept it there. But in 1990, it's now 10, 15 years ago. In 1990, the United States passed a new act. The act is called the Native American Graves Protection and Reparation Act of 1990, NAGPRA, right? And, of course, they had a number of associated regulations. I'm going to have Aaron Green read that, right? Especially I have a link that I want her to read. And I have Kermit is going to play a link also for me that what we and the Bahamas plan to do with the remains of these Native Americans. But let me have Aaron read the link, then read the story, and so you can understand why I'm having these frustrations now, why I'm crying out, I'm asking Bahamians to join me in this protest, right? But Aaron, can you introduce that?
Yeah. This one first?
Read that link.
Pull the other one up on your...
on my phone?
Yeah, because apparently I can't access OPM website right now.
Okay.
Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, returning the remains of Native American ancestors, their funerary belongings, sacred objects, and objects of cultural patrimony to their descendants. The Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act of 1990, NAGPRA 25 U.S.C. 32, and associated regulations, parentheses 43 CFR 10, governs the return of Native American remains, funerary objects, sacred objects, and objects of cultural patrimony to lineal descendants, culturally affiliated Indian tribes, and Native Hawaiian organizations. Through the provisions of NAGPRA, the federal government acts to treat the remains of Native ancestors and their belongings with dignity and to return them to their communities with respect for their customs, religion, and traditions. NAGPRA requires federal agencies and institutions that receive federal funds, including museums, universities, state agencies, and local governments, to repatriate or transfer Native American human remains and other cultural items to the appropriate parties by 1. Consulting with lineal descendants, Indian tribes, and Native Hawaiian organizations on Native American human remains and other cultural items. 2. Protecting and planning for Native American human remains and other cultural items that may be removed from federal or tribal lands. 3. American human remains and other cultural items in inventories and summaries of holdings or collections. And 4. Giving notice prior to repatriating or transferring human remains and other cultural items.
Okay. I want you to read that. Thank you very much for reading that, right? Long and short, it's basically that they pass an act that wherever they confiscated, acquired remains, like bodies of Native Americans, they sent it back to be buried in a dignified way. The Lucayan Indians that they found in the Bahamas on San Salvador, there aren't any Lucayan's descendants in the world, right? So they sent it back. So, you know, Lucayan's a separate group of Tinos, right? So they sent it back to the Bahamas, the place of origin, right? To be buried in a dignified way, right? But because there is nobody here with ties, The proven tithes that they are Lucayan descendants, the proven tithes with Lucayan descendants, they weren't able to turn the bodies over to them. So they returned it to the Bahamian government to be the keeper.
They've been to North Andres?
That's Seminoles, and that's a different thing.
Yeah, but I mean, they've been there, they talked to them.
They're still Seminole, different grouping. Remember, we did research.
I mean,
here.
They're closer cousins to them than I am, yeah, and that you are.
But they would say direct lineage, right?
But they're still closer.
Yeah,
you see what I'm saying?
But I'll be all Native Americans will still be closer. But still, they. Yes, I hear you. I'm saying there's no direct Lucayans in the Bahamas who have that lineal connection to them. Mm-hmm. So it went fall on behalf of the Bahamian government to do something. Or receive these remains and have a dignified burial. Kermit, I want you to play this clip. This clip is saying what our government plans to do with the remains. Right. I want to play this.
You pulled up the article on your phone?
Yeah, I'm coming up right now, so you can read this next.
Yeah, yeah.
Play that clip for me, Kermit.
So I just...
At least three persons, they were found in a cave in San Salvador. So obviously, we've had other artifacts that we've recovered over the years. This will represent an addition to that and give us an opportunity to have some insight on how they live. So this is
there we go. Finished? Okay. No, the clip where I hoped would play was good. That was the director... Cornish, by the way, who's the director of Clifton Heritage. He's a new director of Clifton Heritage.
Who?
Cornish.
Who?
Cornish. You met Cornish. He came to do an interview with me.
Oh, cool. Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Director of
Yeah,
Clifton.
Yeah, nice, nice.
And he explained that it's going to be stored, right? And it's going to be put in display at the AWAC thing, where the place is on Bay Street. Pompeii Museum, that the Bahamians are able to see the bones or whatever it is. And of course, if in the future they'll do whatever experiment to see what type of research they do. I think that flies in the face of what the act, the American Act, put forward.
Yeah.
Right? Now this is from the office of the Prime Minister. I have Aaron pull up to read. See, this is why I get my frustration, right? The Americans, the colonizers, saw what they did. They're retrieving the body. The experimentation on the bodies itself, the putting it on display was offensive. They concluded after years.
To humanity.
To humanity. It was offensive. Mm-hmm. So now they're trying to rectify.
See, because hold on, because somebody's going to say in response, but nobody complained. Nobody complained that we put the artifacts on display.
Yeah.
Right? But it's important to point out that it doesn't have to be offensive to an individual or an individual that has direct, articulable proximity to these ancestors, right? It's offensive to humanity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's generally to people and to things that are living.
Now, this article is written on the Bahamas government's page, right?
Yeah.
I want to put this in the record, right? Because I am offended of what they have, with our government, with our
anthropologists?
Yes. Have decided to
well,
do.
Well, let's make a point here. We're not sure what it is the anthropologists would have recommended. We only know what the policymakers have determined will be done.
Stand corrected. Let's read that for me.
All right, coming from Bahamas Information Services, Prime Minister Davis, return of Lucayan remains is, quote, meaningful, close quotes, to the Bahamas' national story. During his remarks at the registration of Lucayan artifacts and historic military drilling and reenactment ceremony on October 29, 2024, Prime Minister and Minister of Finance, Honorable Philip Davis, said to those in attendance that they had gathered in Rawson and Parliament Squares to witness, quote, a moment that is both deeply reflective and profoundly meaningful for our national story, close quotes. I will continue reading. Sorry,
yes.
I had to take a breath. Quote, it's a moment where part of our past, held far from our shores for nearly a century, has finally returned home, close quotes, PM Davis said. Quote, the remains of the Lucayans are our ancestors.
See?
The first people of these islands have traveled back to us, closing a chapter that began with their removal by George R. Fox from Watling's Island, now known as San Salvador, nearly 100 years ago, close quotes. He added, quote, These bones, resting in a Michigan University storage facility since 1952, are now reunited with the land and legacy that first gave them life. Close quotes. Hold on.
It's offensive.
Stop. It is offensive. First of all.
Finish your article so we can think, so we don't have to go back to it. Go ahead. I understand you're eager. I am eager also.
Close quotes. We begin again. Among those present were Minister of Education and Technical and Vocational Training, the Honorable Glenys Hannah Martin, Minister of National Security, the Honorable Wayne Monroe, Commander of the Royal Bahamas Defense Force, Commodore Dr. Raymond King, and other RBDF representatives, senior officials of the Antiquities, Monuments, and Museums Corporation. I mean,
see?
They wouldn't even call an executive. They like the most important people in the space.
The politicians.
They know them. The others. Chargé d'affaires, the Embassy of the United States, Kimberly Furnish, school students, and other stakeholders. Prime Minister Davis pointed out that the event that day was a, quote, powerful reminder of the journey of our people, close quotes. Whose people?
Don't worry about it. We soon
okay,
get to there.
I close the quotes. Quote, the Lucayans were the first in the Americas to meet Christopher Columbus, marking a period that would tragically lead to their destruction and the erasure of an entire culture, close quotes. He noted, quote, they had been here for hundreds of years, thriving, celebrating, and burying their loved ones with reverence in the caves of these islands, close quotes. Prime Minister Davis added, quote, yet they were also the first to suffer the devastation brought by colonial encounters. While DNA studies show no biological link between them and present-day Bahamians, their spirit and influence echo through our culture, guiding us in ways that transcend more than lineage, close quotes. I'd like to meet the person who wrote that. He stated that Bahamian history was one of resilience, endurance, and adaptation. Quote, from the Lucayans to the enslaved Africans who built Fort Charlotte to the Bahamians who carved out livelihoods from the sea and the land, each generation has faced its own struggles, yet emerged with strength and dignity, close quotes. He said, quote, these stories of courage and survival are more than just history lessons. They are the foundation of who we are as a people, close quotes. PM Davis added, quote, they remind us that our heritage is not just a collection of events, but a testament to the resilience that runs through our blood. Close quotes. How, Nuri? How? I have to just stick a pin. How could it run through our blood if you tell us in the earlier paragraphs that the DNA testing has proven that there is no
Not yet, Aaron. Read the article for the people who didn't see the article. Then they can understand that why we need to do something. Because right now, it's ego is happening. It's about the political codes, because they already mentioned the political codes in the listing of this article, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not about the sacredness, the sanctity, the dignity of these people who they claim as our ancestors. Every Native American tribe who received skeletal remains buried it. They had a big ceremony. They honored the dead. It was a sacred moment. But to us, it's something to make money off. But finish reading the article so I could think. Finish?
Right? No, it's not finished at all. He continued by noting that the journey to bring the Lucayan remains, quote, home, close quotes, had been, quote, long and filled with complex paths, close quotes. Prime Minister Davis pointed out that the return was made possible through the 1990 Native American Graves Protections and Repatriation Act, a law that mandated institutions to return remains and sacred artifacts to their communities whenever possible. Quote, thanks to this collaboration between Michigan State University's Art and Collections Department and our own Antiquities, Monuments, and Museums Corporation, we mark a historic first for the Bahamas, the return of ancestral remains from an international institution, close quotes, he pointed out. Quote, this act is more than a transaction. It is a restoration of dignity, a healing of wounds, and a recognition of our...
I would need you to repeat this.
Of our shared responsibility to honor cultural heritage, close quotes. And I repeat, he pointed out, full stop, quote, this act is more than a transaction. So it is a transaction.
It's more than a transaction.
I mean, is it transactional is really the question. It is a restoration of dignity, a healing of wounds, and a recognition of our shared responsibility to honor cultural heritage, close quotes. Prime Minister Davis noted that the Bahamas' connection to the past did not stop with the Lucayans, And he highlighted the reenactment that day that, quote, honors the service and sacrifices of the West India Regiment, men of African descent who fought for the British Army in the Caribbean and Africa, close quotes. He added that in historic uniforms, the Bahamas' own Royal Bahamas Defense Force Rangers and young recruits performed military drills in Parliament and Rawson Squares, where audience members were transported back to the 18th century. Quote, these reenactments serve as a vivid reminder of the bravery and resilience that have been passed down through generations, close quotes, Prime Minister Davis stated. He added, quote, Fort Charlotte, completed in 1819, stands as a reminder of the dual legacy of our past, built by both enslaved and freed Africans under Lord Dunmore's governorship. Fort Charlotte, along with Forts Darcy and Stanley, defended our islands and symbolizes the resilience and strength of those who shaped these shores. Named for Queen Charlotte, it was built as both a fortress and a statement of our place in the world, even when those who built it had no freedom of their own, close quotes. Quote, as we look back on the stories of the Lucayans, the West India Regiment, and the construction of Fort Charlotte, we are reminded of the importance of reclaiming our history, remembering those who came before us and celebrating their impact on who we are today. Close quotes, PM Davis said. Quote, the resilience and legacy of our ancestors shape our present and inspire us toward a future where we uphold our heritage with pride. Close quotes, he added. Prime Minister Davis stated that that day, those in attendance not only witnessed, quote, the return of our ancestors' remains, but we honor their enduring presence and influence, close quote. Quote, they are part of the spirit that defines us, a spirit that endures and guides our nation forward, close quotes. He said, we're almost done, quote, let us embrace this moment with reverence, reflection, and a renewed commitment to preserving our heritage for generations yet to come, close quote. Quote, we Bahamians carry in our blood the courage of the Lucayans. I heard Europeans back then, some of them used to drink blood. The strength of the West India Regiment and the unbreakable spirit of those who laid the stones of our forts, close quotes. Prime Minister Davis added this, quote, this legacy of resilience, unity, and pride is what drives us as a people, and it is our shared duty to carry it forward, close quotes.
Okay, fine.
Give me a moment. I just need to call my cousins in the South and in the West of us, you know, the Garifuna people,
yeah,
and the Kalinago people.
I plan to reach out to my Kalinago contact and ask for help in my lobby to have our government interred these remains.
Interred the remains, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Interred these remains. I have, because they were here recently, last year, the year before,
yeah,
and connected with one or two of them.
Right, because surely they can not just share with us what contemporary burial practices and practices of honoring the dead exist. They could possibly share with us how they would have treated remains returned to them in the same way. But they possibly have in their documentation and preservation of history and culture insight on what Lucayans would have done. And then with our engagement with their most direct ancestors or cousins or right lineage, we could determine the best way to honor the remains of those who first occupied these islands.
I'm going to ask you a question, Aaron. Name me some monument, some grand ceremony that we have done for the Lucayan Indians in the Bahamas. Any type of monument throughout the Bahamas done by the government. Recognition. I ask you that because I know the answer. There is none. We are hoping to hopefully rename our part of the Atlantic Ocean, the Lucayan Sea. We still asking permission
right,
from whatever international bodies to do that.
Are we doing it because we absolutely and totally embrace the value of those who first occupied these islands? Or are we doing it because we want to separate ourselves from the other Negroes in the rest of the region?
See, my concern is we have now adopted the colonizer spirit. Colonizers claim things, make things indignant. They claim the bodies, the remains, and put it on display. And then we who have learned better, supposed to know better, because we have suffered indignation also. When we receive the remains of these fellow humans, we should say, no, we're not going to be like the colonizer. We're going to inter it. We're going to have some dignity in terms of what we're going to do with these bodies, especially when we have no monuments, no grand recognition of the first people of the Bahamas, right? And the clip that I tried to play, but it didn't play, with the director of Clifton, he mentioned what he planned to do. He said that we plan to put it on display and do whatever experiments and help us. And I said, it wasn't returned for that. It was not returned to the Bahamas for that.
And if those that took it and held it acknowledged that that is not what is supposed to be done with it, why would we pick it up and then say we can go do the same thing?
We have become colonizers. The colonizer spirit lives in us.
Well, I mean, I can be honest with you, but it's perhaps the colonizer blood lives within us as well more than the spirit. I just saying, every once in a while, you know, I just have to call my cousin Charles, which is why I don't have a problem with calling my cousins Garifunas and the Kalinagos.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I just heard that we have an opportunity, and it seems that we just still haven't recognized our responsibility to, like how the Prime Minister say, and the ancestors.
I'm concerned because it appears as if tourism, does tourism have a spirit? The spirit of tourism has consumed everything in this town. And before we could even reconcile with the reason why we were having this ceremony, we were already salivating with ways in which we can
capitalize on it
and make money through tourism on these sacred artifacts.
On these sacred artifacts, who we claim to be our ancestors.
And then all of a sudden, somebody can remind us, if you want to be middle class, this is what it takes, right? You want to live a good life, this is what it takes. You got to figure out how to make money. All y'all want is good things, and you want the government to pay for anything, but how the government supposed to make money? Mm. We just want to put the sacred artifacts of descendants of these islands from hundreds and hundreds of years ago on display, despite the fact that the whole mechanism that made them available to us inherently...
Mm-hmm.
Inherently opposes that action.
Yes. I have a couple of texts here, and then we can transition to that, my next topic, I guess. First text is, I always wondered about this practice of displaying bones. These people conducted a religious ceremony to honor the person who died. They cleaned the body, dressed the body, it in a ceremony robes, and buried the body with great fanfare. Then we come along, dig up the sacred grave, and display the desecrate the body for people to gawk at. I don't know. It seems like stomping on the grave, and I think it's stomping on the grave, right? They can't do DNA on live people. Exactly what tests will they conduct? How long it takes the bones to turn to dust? That's the next text.
Like if you told me what you're going to do is you're going to partner with the UB Art School, right, so that they can make authentic replicas of it, like without touching them, like just visual inspection and observation.
Do we need replicas of dead bodies?
I'm just saying of the artifacts, if you want to put them on display, this is what I'm saying, if you want to put them on display, you make replicas.
I'm not sure if a body could be an artifact. That's my point. Bury the body. I wouldn't want my Grammy to be on display. I would like her to be interred, her bones interred, and her respect. And we respect the dead here. We're civilized, supposed to be a civilized country.
We're supposed to respect the dead.
Yeah.
We're not really doing a very good
another
job
text says,
culturally of that.
Bahamians have no Lucayan connections. They were extinct way before the 1700s. We only possess their artifacts that were found. No heritage, absolutely none, which we established already. Right? I'm just concerned, and I want people to lobby, demand, right into AMMC. And tell them, no, we don't want to see no dead body. We want you.
But is AMMC the appropriate place? I mean, it should be, but are you getting the impression that AMMC made this decision?
Well, their name was not even highlighted in the article. They even didn't call the director of the AMMC in the article. They called the Prime Minister. They called the Minister of National Security. They called a list of, even called the Ambassador to the United States.
The Chargé.
So thank you very much for the question. The Charge. Charge the affair of the United States. But no one, no anthropologist or person who doing studies names were called. It shows where they ranked in this discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I am concerned. And I think that more noise needs to be had. Right? Behemoths need to be concerned.
Where are they going to store it? How are they going to
store it? They can put it in a box, the same way where they had the window.
No, on display. Say, let's say they put it on display, right? Put it on display. Where's the temperature and environment controlled space that it will be displayed? Where is that? And then here's the thing. I'm a Bahamian. Am I going to have to pay the same amount of money as a tourist to go see it?
We have no national museum. So there's only be one place they're going to put it. They're going to put it in Pompeii Museum when they have the AWAC display there.
Don't try shame me. The question I ask you is, will I have to pay the same amount of money that the tourist has to pay?
I think it is cheaper. There is cheaper for Bahamians. All cultural and historical places cheaper for native.
Isn't that the place that almost burned down because they didn't have enough water on the Bay Street?
Yeah, the same place.
That's where we can put it?
That's where we can put it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But we have an opportunity to create a monument. We have an opportunity to invite AWAC descendants to the Bahamas and show that we respect our, in quotes, ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
And we invite you to be a part of this. Right.
In fact, we ask you to engage us in determining how to do it. Not because what's the worst thing is to invite them to be a part of something that is so completely and totally offensive because it is devoid of any actual understanding of the cultures that we're trying to replicate. Maybe we should go to them and ask them to tell us how we should best move forward.
This text says, Mr. Nuri, out of respect, bury the dead and let their souls rest in peace. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to bring this to the fore, Aaron. I've been writing like crazy, as you know, and tagging AMMC. There's no response yet. And I said, I need to apply pressure.
You were tagging the wrong people.
Yeah, clearly. I need to tag the Prime
you
Minister.
You know who was there? The Minister of National Security was there.
Think tagging the National Security.
He's going to secure those things.
Mm. Keep it safe, eh?
Mm-hmm.
In the box.
Mm-hmm.
They plan to put it on Collins Avenue in the back of there.
In the back of where?
Say, in the box. That's why I said I wanted to play the clip. By the director.
He said they could put it in the box?
They could put it in the box. That's why I said the director corner said it was going to put
it. Do they mean like a plexiglass?
A box. No,
like a plexiglass museum, transparent glass.
Shoebox, just to hold it safe until we find, until they get an appropriate place to put it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what was said. And I said, that's why I tried to play the clip. It just didn't come out. So hopefully, if you wanted to see that clip.
He said that?
I tell you.
I cannot believe it, Mr. Nuri.
Yeah, that's what I say. And they could do experiments on it.
Like for what? Like experiment for what?
I guess to say
to see if the little roach will eat it if they leave it out in the box too long. Like what experiments are they going to conduct?
I don't
on it.
But the truth is, the university where they got it from didn't do anything with it. They saw no value in it at all.
No,
so they kept it.
Not that they saw no value in it, but that they saw that they were
Remember, they had it from 1920, you know, up to 1990. Up to 1990.
Right, but the point is that the value derived from experimentation may not be greater than the value of the thing itself existing, and you don't want to risk destroying it just to experiment. Value it for what it is, it exists.
Yeah, I just say that we have something worthwhile. We change in topics now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take a quick commercial break here. Let me read this,
mm-hmm.
and then we come and talk about middle class. What is the middle class? Yeah?
Sure.
Sure.
I don't know if I could afford that conversation.
No, you are not middle class. You're a working class.
It's a barely working class.
Hey, let me read this. Join the National Guardian as we celebrate our milestone 180th anniversary on November 23rd, 2024. Beginning Monday, November 4th, and every day this week, we feature a blast from the past, highlighting pages from this oldest and most respected newspaper of record over the past 18 decades. Wonderful snapshots of a Bahamas transitioning from the abolition of slavery to the period of internal self-governance and independence and into the 21st century. Surprising keepsakes for history buffs or anyone who just loves the Bahamas. So this is Guardian Radio AM. This would see A. Nuri, Aaron Green is joining me, and we shall be back as we transition and talk about middle class. What is the middle class?
No matter what the people them say, you say it ain't over. Listen, you've got to be strong, carry on.
This November, the Nassau Guardian is celebrating 180 years. And we want to thank you, our loyal readers, for helping to make this one of the oldest newspapers in the region. We want you to be a part of our Vision Challenge giveaway promotion beginning October 28th through November 22nd. All you need to do is find the hidden Nassau Guardian 180 years logo printed every day in the Nassau Guardian newspaper, and you could win prize money. Just purchase your daily Nassau Guardian newspaper every day beginning Monday, October 28th. Find the 180th Nassau Guardian logo, cut out the page, mark the spot, write your name and phone number on that clipping, drop off your entries at our offices on Carter Street in Oaksfield, and every Friday, November 1st, November 8th, November 15th, and November 22nd, one drawing will take place. It's that simple.
The Grand Bahama News is available every Tuesday in the Nassau Guardian. You can buy your local paper at Freeport convenience stores, Western Bakery, DeGregory's Fine Foods, and Bellevue Gifts. Now is the time to reach your Grand Bahama market with affordable packages, including print and digital. Call GB News sales representative Kavondre at 822-6717 or message him on WhatsApp for ad rates. Classified ads are now available every Tuesday as well. Keep up with everything Grand Bahamian every Tuesday in the Nassau Guardian.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio AM. Of course, this is C.A. Nurin. I'm your host for today. We are talking middle class now. Truth is, no Bahamian. There is no definition of middle class in the Bahamas. We have no clue what the middle class is. I see the University of Bahamas is attempting to define it. I'm not sure if they did a proper job at it, because Bahamians still don't understand what is the middle class. Mind you, we understand what the middle class is in the United States because they have fully defined it there. The middle class is to me, an American concept. But as we try to define ourselves, recognize ourselves, to put things on paper, I find that the University of the Bahamas is attempting to explain things. Recently, this headline caused chaos inside the Bahamas as people start questioning the officials at the university, the academics at the university, asking them, are y'all crazy? You see these numbers? I find that Bahamians do not understand what livable wage is, minimum wages, and wages in general. There is the working class people, middle class people, and of course there's rich people and variations of what rich is. In a nutshell, the professors at the University of the Bahamas are basically saying that what we think middle class is, it ain't. They're saying that there are a number of things that middle class people are supposed to be having, right, or doing. And because we have a number of working class people who have middle class trinkets, that they have confused and skewed the whole concept of what middle class is. And that's where we highlighting today. We have people who are making $30,000 who could travel to Miami, right? But living paycheck to paycheck claiming they're middle class. We have people who making $50,000 up to $70,000. I could do anything any middle class person could do. But if I get married and want to pay health insurance, I can't do it. We have people who say, man, I don't need to be able to afford health insurance. That's my job. My job pays for health insurance. And because I have access to it now, I am middle class. And there are people who say, man, the best health insurance we have inside the Bahamas
is Jesus.
It is Jesus. Is inadequate. And this is what I think the professors at the university, the researchers at the University of the Bahamas are saying, that there's a standard, a minimum standard that middle class people supposed to have. And to get to that standard, you're going to need $10,000.
A month
to get to that standard.
Not a year.
A month. Now, that's a lot of money.
That's $120,000.
To get those amenities would have what standard for middle class?
That's $120,000.
See, that's a different paycheck.
That's three paychecks.
Yeah. Yeah, but let's read the article so we can get some kind of understanding of what's happening.
We'll start in the Nassau Guardian. Middle-class families need $10,000 a month. A UB study looks at cost of living for middle-income families on New Providence and GB. Cost of living for middle-class families on New Providence is 104% higher than low-income families. A University of the Bahamas study has found that a middle-class family of four in New Providence needs a monthly income of $10,200 to have a decent life, or $10,100 a month if living in Grand Bahama. The findings are contained in UB researcher Les V. Archer's paper, quote, "How much does it cost to be middle class in the Bahamas?" Close quotes. It was published on October 23, 2024 in the International Journal of Bahamian Studies. The study also includes updated cost of living estimates for a low-income family of four. Archer was lead researcher of the paper, A Living Wage for the Bahamas, Estimates, Potentials, and Problems, which was published in 2021. That study found that in 2020, a working class family of four needed $4,400 a month to live a decent and affordable life in New Providence and $5,750 a month in Grand Bahama. So that's an increase of almost $6,000 per month.
And I still think we're confusing the issue. That $4,000 was for working class people or people who need a livable wage. We now talk about middle class people.
Mm-hmm.
That's a different.
Tell me how it's different.
When I was younger, mm-hmm. going to a Chuk-Chuk private school, I can call it name, mm-hmm. right? Small, ain't much money. I lived in a 2-bedroom clapboard house,
mm-hmm.
right? My neighbors, them who live in a 2-bedroom clapboard, the whole neighborhood live in 2-bedroom clapboard houses, right? They got a answering machine, and they got a microwave, and they got a telephone, right?
Mm-hmm.
I assume they were middle class and said, my God, you're rich. You go into private school, and you have an answering machine, and you have these trinkets, microwave, you're rich.
Mm-hmm.
But when I went to school, I realized that I had friends who had, you know, the phone with the screen. Mind you, this is the 1980s, you know. They had phones that you could touch the screen in 1980 and you could see the person's, like, I'd have the, like, how you.
They used to call them drug dealer phones?
Well, this wasn't drug dealers. These were Bahamians.
That's not the point. The phone was a drug dealer phone.
But you could see the person's face, like Star Wars back then.
Mm-hmm.
They were middle class because they weren't rich. And I was actually poor. Right, we now have people confusing that because they have middle class trinkets, BMWs, Japanese BMW, the Japanese Mercedes Benz, that they actually think they are middle class, that they can go to Miami and New York. But there are Bahamians who have access to real money, who know that they're not rich, despite making $200,000-$300,000. They say, no man, I work in. That's why I got to go to work to make my $200,000-$300,000. And you people who making $40,000, y'all can't be in the same working class as
me. Like in terms of needs.
Go ahead.
In terms of needs, what's the difference between a lower class and an upper class?
Let me just pull in the political class. We have politicians who refuse to retire so they can get medical insurance to go to the States. They'll be politician until they're 90.
But everybody needs health care.
Yeah, no, see, we have health care here.
No,
go to Princess Margaret.
Everybody
or
needs.
Or you go to doctor's
That's what I'm saying. What's the difference between.
Quality.
Needs. No, what's the difference between needs? We all need the best health care possible.
Yeah, but quality of the health care. See.
So the difference isn't in what you need. The difference is in what you should expect.
Yes, the quality. Now, is it safe to say that doctor's hospitals are best health care provide at this present time?
I don't know. Because I can't afford it.
I understand that.
I don't know.
And there are people who say, who would question, say, but is that as best that the country can offer? Man, I go into the States. I go in for a second opinion, right? I go into to try a place where you have middle class quality.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we're talking about.
Right? So not what you need, but what you should expect.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of quality of life.
Yes. And we have a caller on there. We have different articles we want to read into the record
mm-hmm.
and compare and contrast. But let's go to this caller first.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, caller. Can you hear us?
Yeah, good morning to both of you. Sorry, I'm just joining the Guardian Radio classes beginning today. I mean, just now. But just heard you two, you're arguing about the different definition of classes. There's the working class, middle class, and upper class, okay? Generally speaking, the middle class is individuals. You have to determine the median income of the median household income in the Bahamas. And that is, you have to extrapolate that not from using the full GDP or, you know, earnings that we say, 400,000 people divided by GDP. You have to use the number of people in the workforce. Let's use an example. You say our GDP is $16 billion. And so if you use the 200,000, say 200 people in the working form, that would be $80,000. That would be $80,000 a year that the person would earn in the Bahamas. And so then what you would do is take generally two-thirds of that income. So the middle class in the Bahamas, by virtue of that, is people making the $53,600 a year or more. They make between between 67% of that median income and 200% of that median income. The upper class that we talk about, or the rich, is the 1-2% of the society that makes way above that. Most of them make their money from investments, inheritance, high-level executive, professional roles, etc. Then you have the working class, and this is the people that live in that other one-third of the income schedule, and they're the people like what we call the blue-collar jobs, like manufacturing, construction, transportation, service industry, which we are high on. The problem that in the Bahamas is that when you even go to the poverty level, and this is where that initially this thing confused me, that the poverty level required in 2001 required 4,247 per person in the house not to be under the poverty level. So if you had four people in the house, you had to make $17,000 a year in the Bahamas to not meet the poverty level. That has since rise, about using inflation rule, is since rise to about $6,000 to $7,000 a year. So technically in the Bahamas, you have to make $7,000 per person in the house, not just to get above the poverty line. That's the absolute poverty line. So if you have a mother, single mother, two child, and she's not taking home $21,000 a year, she's below the poverty line.
But let's, using your numbers, you said 54,000 would be middle class. Is that for an individual? If I become a family of four?
No, just use household income.
But this, so it's 54,000 per household income?
Right, no, right. This is what...
That means I can't get no insurance then, because I can't be able to afford
it. This is what it's required. In fact, if you go back to the poverty study in 2014 or 2013, they released it. It showed that you needed $52,000, a family in the Bahamas needed $52,000 a year to make ends meet based on what is called the standard of living and the cost of living in the Bahamas.
But ends meet is not middle class, though.
Huh?
To make ends meet is not middle class.
Yes, it is. The middle class, no, in our country, the middle class will just be making ends meet because of the cost of living, the cost of living index. Right, what it costs to buy stuff. So even when you make $53,000 in the Bahamas, it's probably $90,000, and you have to make $90,000 to meet the $53,000 in the U.S. standard.
See, Alan, do me a favor. I ask you a question. Outside of Dr. Olivia Saunders, name an economist from a Bahamian economist.
Pinder.
Outside of Dr. Olivia Saunders, Pinder who? Rupert Pinder?
Rupert Pinder.
I would say Shivago Lang, Gawin Bo.
Okay, pause. Gawin Bo, because Shivago Lang have politician, you guys say, economists and politicians, that changed the whole dynamic. Gawin Bo, Dr. Olivia Saunders. Who else?
Gilbert Morris.
Okay, Gilbert Morris. He working in the government service right now, so he don't count.
Right. Let me think. Who else? I'm thinking.
It's okay. Don't worry about it. I mean, I know that... they exist outside of the set who were involved, because the only economists we ever hear about outside of Gowan and Saunders, right, are all engaged in the political class right now. Morris, I will put him in a broader category than just economists, right? I think he's he's more than that.
I'm saying to you, his qualification will go beyond, but the qualification of an economist is what his stance on his stance on his own.
Absolutely. Why do you think we don't hear contributions from economists?
I think Edison Sumner is an economist too, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, okay, we go. That's a name. I'm writing it down. I don't know if you're putting it on the list. But that's not an aspersion being cast against him at all. Just making a decision.
No, but I'm saying we may have people that has the who could meet the qualification who choose not to do it, because an economist is like how I do data.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be an economist and not be immersed. You know, like you said, if you're going to be a swimmer, you got to always be in the pool. And so if you're not practicing and watching the data trends and everything changing on a consistent basis, then you may have the definition. Like you say, you could be a doctor and never practice medicine.
Yeah. I wonder.
But let me tell you something.
Yeah.
There is a disparity in the Bahamas. And the problem is that we need the growth, the economic growth that we have had across the years, that we are now at almost $16 billion, has been because those have been external forces growing within the Bahamas. The problem is that we have never had policies to shift ownership, even though not, for instance, you have hospitality and tourism now. There's a concept of localizing the ownership of those different things, and we saw it with the Airbnb for 2 decades that we've ignored it. In fact, we were the first people in the world to do it with the people program. Then what you have now is we have, say, financial services that we have, fintech, regulatory tech, and supervisory tech, property tech, and TradeFi has now, these are digitization of those concepts, but we are still maintaining the same old thing. This is why we cry about banks.
Okay.
The borders for access to capital fell in the Bahamas about 15 years ago. In fact, under Mr. Lang, when he was in Parliament the last time, when they changed some rules concerning access to capital and other things. The problem is that behemoths have not been taught. And now that it's been digitized, it's even easier to have access. We're still going to the same well, complaining about the nasty taste in the well because we're down to the mud.
Okay.
And so we need to just simply go to the new wells around the world, but it requires leadership that understands an opportunity and ownership economy.
Okay,
and we're not having those type of conversations.
Thank you very much.
You.
It's already 11:58. Let me read this. It says, Cecil, I have on my property in South Andres the largest Lucayan burial site in the Western Hemisphere, a collection of 15 skeletons, male, females, and children. There are several others still underwater caves on my property. The AMMC is holding the skeletal remains and cultural artifacts removed from the sanctuary Luhol. And of course, he sent a whole link about the fine
Send me the link. I take a picture. Yeah. Send me the link.
Good.
And let's talk about it. Amazing. Amazing. I think it's important for us to have these conversations. Where are the economists, right? Where are the people helping Bahamians understand their role in the growth of the country as a whole, right? People need to know what it is they need to do to ensure that the economy can grow.
And we need definitions. We need to understand what middle class is. We need to understand what working class is. A working definition where we can embrace and say, okay, moving forward, this is who we are.
We need to understand what middle class means and then determine if it is fit to be applied to us. We free, we sovereign now. We can define ourselves and define these terms for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we can have this discussion again. Unfortunately, tomorrow we're talking about the U.S. election.
Yeah.
All day we talk about the U.S. election. Who do you think is going to win the U.S. election, and by how much, and what does it mean for the Bahamas in general? So we'll have that discussion tomorrow as we do our predictions and how Bahamians feel in general about what's happening there.
How Bahamians voting?
Bahamians can vote?
I mean, they seem like they're talking.
They
like
do. We seem vested. Be heavily vested in what's happening in the United States.
Right? I mean, I got some American family, so I am concerned, but I didn't know I could vote. I didn't know.
Yeah, it is what it is. Anyway, this has been Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. Have a wonderful day.
Crime doesn't pay. If being bad was good, boy, then why they lock away? Don't mind what your friends say, boy. Crime doesn't pay.
Just say, yeah.
Now all you kids in school, this song should speak to you.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.